Tony, I was gone, and then you were gone.
Yep.
But now we get to do a show just the two of us and no Dieter.
Ugh, he's here, dude.
What?
Yeah, he showed up.
Hey, guys. Play to win the game. You don't play to just play it. You play to win.
This is NFL Cash Money. With your host, Dieter McBusiness. And with him always, Gilman.
Welcome to the Week 6 edition of NFL Cash Money, boys and girls. I am your host, Dieter McBusiness, joined finally for the first time in 4 weeks by the one and only Alex Gilman and Tony Baker. Say what's up, fellas.
Hey.
That might have been a little misleading. I was here last week.
Oh, right. Well, all of us in the same room at the same time for the first time in about a month.
Hi, guys. That wasn't confusing at all.
So, since we were all last together, the season has taken on a very legitimate personality I see forming. One of the teams we're going to be talking about tonight that I think we're all excited about is the Falcons. But before we get into that, Gilman or Tony, do you guys have any preliminary comments on last week or this week? Any initial thoughts that you'd like to share with the audience?
Well, I mean, not to paint everything in too negative a light, but if the season as a whole has taken on a personality, it's that the vast majority of these games are terrible.
Right.
Like, this has been a bad, unfun NFL season by and large, although the outliers, the games that have been entertaining...
Really entertaining.
...have been really entertaining, so it sort of, I suppose, evens out. I'm not complaining per se, but I guess I am saying that, like, there is probably money to be made here in, you know, digging into the muck that nobody else wants to peer into. That maybe the teams that are the most entertaining right now, and therefore are getting the most public action, aren't necessarily the ones you're going to make your money off of.
One term that comes to mind when you talk about it in that way that you hear in economic circles, wealth gap. We have the wealth gap present in the NFL today, both in terms of the good teams versus the bad teams, but also in the games and the quality of games that you're talking about. Most are average or below average games, whereas usually it's like 50-50 good games and 50-50 average games. But yeah, I would agree with that assessment. That definitely feels like a mediocre year overall, but still, you know, 3 or 4 really good games every weekend.
Every year you say this feels like a mediocre year for the NFL, and if I'm really taking a step back, I think we should have...
I think you should go into the archives and prove that, because I think
you talk about how negative you are. This has been a great year for the NFL. I'm going to go the other way. I think it's really exciting. I think it's fun that there's a lot of unpredictability happening. Nobody could have guessed the Panthers were going to start 1-4. Nobody could have guessed the Falcons were going to be as good as they are.
We're talking about the games themselves, though.
The games themselves have been great. Okay. You've got a lot of close games. You've got the Raiders playing for going for broke twice already this year, going for it on fourth down and winning both times.
Yeah, that's what we're saying, though. Those moments are kind of a little bit less frequent, a little bit fewer and far between. And I mean, okay.
I would want to see numbers on that. To me, it doesn't feel like that. To me, every week, I feel like I'm watching highlights or if I'm watching
the
whole game.
Here's probably another way to look at it that could kind of synthesize both of these views, which is that it's not necessarily that things are worse than they've ever been. It's that what happens every year is you go into it with certain expectations. But as you know, what's the statistic? It's like half of all the playoff teams from any given year don't make the playoffs.
Five in, five out.
So the whole idea is maybe you're just looking at you're contrary to your expectations, the games that are good aren't the ones you expected, and therefore you're being let down by your own expectations when really you just need to leave yourself open in the beginning of the year to be surprised by the teams that are on the come up. And that kind of goes, you know, hand in hand with Dieter's general philosophy of, like, lay off the games when you're in the early going and try and, you know, kind of get a feel for the new season, which really is its own new thing.
Every year.
And that would prevent you from doing things like going heavy on Carolina and being really disappointed, going heavy on, you know, I don't know who else, like maybe ignoring teams like the Eagles or even like the Bills that are looking good now.
Well, one of the things I thought that we talked about last week, one of the more important pieces of analysis that we offered last week was the Falcons-Broncos game. And it was like, be careful, there's something weird going on here. The Falcons are trending up. You got Paxton Lynch is the new QB for the Broncos. Speaking of which, do you guys want to get into some analysis? Because we are opening up with the Broncos at Chargers.
Yeah, let's do it.
It seems like a natural segue here. Broncos at Chargers, Thursday Night Football. The San Diego Superchargers have one win on the books against the Jags, a couple of brutal losses for the Chargers. The opener against the Chiefs, the comeback, obviously, but you know, most recently from the Raiders this last weekend, and they looked like it was going to definitely go to OT. That obviously did not happen. Tony, this is kind of your domain. You kind of have a proprietor of the NFC West. So there are two division games this week, Broncos at Raiders, and then the – oh, sorry, Broncos at Chargers on Thursday Night Football, Chiefs and then Raiders – hosting the Chiefs on Sunday. So what do you think here? What's going to be – what's the NFC West – or sorry, AFC West going to look like at the end of this weekend?
I think the Raiders are going to be alone in first place.
Okay. You think the Broncos are going to win at San Diego or lose, obviously?
I look, here's the thing. First of all, I'm going to say that the Chiefs are 2-2 because they have Andy Reid as their coach.
Okay.
The comeback against the Chargers really was something of a fluke.
Right, because Keenan Allen got injured.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they were set up to lose that game and somehow managed to pull it out. I think the Chiefs, honestly, are a 1-3 team without the pieces that they had from last season's team. And I think that they're getting ready to go in and get beat by the Raiders at home, which I want to say is an upset, but hey.
All right, start out with Broncos Chargers real quick, listeners, it moved already. Broncos at -3 it opened up at, and now it's at Broncos -3.5. So people are loving the Broncos in this spot. I do not. I'm scared to death of this game.
Yeah, here's why.
Well, how could you have watched what's his name? Paxton Lynch play last week. Right. Maybe that hyped on them.
I don't know, but the market enough is because it's already moved to half a point. It's only been 2 days.
And it's because the Chargers blew another game in horrific Chargers fashion. I mean, I can only imagine that the only reason why Philip Rivers hasn't murdered his entire family on some like late Sunday night thus far is because he has so many kids that it would be really difficult to do. Because, Jesus, does anybody do more in a loss than Philip Rivers?
Nope.
I mean, a lot of it's garbage time, but like, that guy just starts racking up numbers in garbage time, only to have it not matter at all.
Check down Charlie.
I think the Chargers win a close one here, thanks to Joey Bosa. And I think
Bosa, he's coming on.
He looked like, I mean, he was got his first start of the week last year. His appearance on the defense side of the ball was such a shot in the arm of the Chargers. I think that's why the Raiders struggled early, was because he was just all over the place.
Wasn't even credited for at least one sack that
right.
I saw.
And how could they have game planned for something they didn't realize was going to be, well, A, was going to be on the field, two, was going to be that dynamic once they hit the field.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the fact that Bosa's going up against the Broncos, the Chargers have been tough luck losers a couple times already this year. They can score. They can still score. They've proven they can score. And yes, the Broncos defense is going to hold them down. But I see Chargers at home. Joey Bosa makes a clutch play against a rookie quarterback who's not ready for the spotlight yet. And Chargers pull out 120.
So you think there's good value? Because actually, I'm going to brag a little bit. I made a little bit of cheddar on Monday Night Football with the Bucks' prediction of the upset over the Panthers. It just a game
we
usually
talked about that.
I know a game that we definitely talked about that. We actually were agreeing on that game definitely about definitely want to be taking the points. And also, but the value might be, you know, the upset, given that Cam Newton wasn't starting. And
just from the start,
it could have gone either way. Let's be serious. I mean, that game was a coin toss. There were a lot of wrinkles that could have gone the way of the Panthers and resulted in them winning.
Yeah, but no, I mean, just from the start of the season, when we were analyzing that matchup, we were saying that the Bucs have a really good shot at beating the Panthers, even if the Panthers are going to be the better team and have a better record, just because of the matchup. The tall receivers
the style of teams, yeah.
on the outside for the Bucs, the tall court, they can go right over that subject secondary of Carolina, and that's exactly what you saw happen on Monday night.
Okay. You know, we usually go in order here, but since we're talking about the AFC West, why don't we keep going and just do the Chiefs-Raiders really quick?
Okay, that's fine.
You know, Chiefs have had a disappointing start to the season. 2-2. I think they definitely expected to be, you know, 3-1 at this point. And then you've got the Raiders, who are just growing up before our eyes here, but definitely a handful of plays away from being 2-2 themselves. You know, they could have easily lost a couple of these games. Let me ask you this about the Raiders, because one thing, I watched that game on the condensed version on Game Pass. Were you a little bit shaken by how easily the Chargers were moving the ball? I mean, it seems like if you have a good offensive coordinator who knows how to take that Raider D-line out of the equation, you can move the ball pretty easily against this Raider secondary.
The problem with the Raiders right now is two things. It's not their offense at all. Let's just say that.
Right.
No,
the Raider offense is phenomenal. They're better than we thought they were going to be, frankly. And Crabtree's having his best year as a pro, period.
Well, and Amari broke out this week. I mean, like,
finally,
but all of a sudden, now with two legit, right, Crabtree, best year as a pro by far.
Yeah.
Amari, this last week, started living up again to the potential that we knew he had from last year. like, you know, Latavius Murray is no great shakes, but, like, there's a lot of talent behind them.
So
and, right, it's a kind of the Dallas scenario where it's like you can run the ball behind this line with even marginal talent, and they have better than marginal talent.
Absolutely. And so switching to the concern for the Raiders, because we talked about it. Gilman, you said at the, I think, first episode, the Raiders have killers at every level, but they're not playing together yet. That the defense is definitely out of sync. Carl Joseph gave him a boost in the arm. He looks good. The middle's starting to get better.
What position does he play?
Carl Joseph's safety.
Yeah, I'm just making sure our listeners. Yeah.
Since they injected him in the lineup last week, the run defense has improved. They're still missing some cues on the back end. But again, Sean Smith, Amerson, first year playing in this, first year playing together, first year Bruce Irvin on the team with Mac on the other side. But they are missing a killer in the interior of the defensive line. And I think that's where they're getting pushed around. I mean, if you think about, to me, the difference between right now the Minnesota defense and what they're doing and the quality of the talent on the Raider defense at every level and what they're not doing, it's the fact that they can't stop that. They can't get that push up the middle.
Okay.
And without that push up the middle, it takes a lot of those edge rushing opportunities away because the speed rushers going around the corner have to then come back to the quarterback.
Okay.
And the Raiders aren't getting enough push up the middle, and it's making it easier to move the ball. And
that's some damn good analysis, guys. I hope you were listening and paying attention and could understand that visually because that's very smart.
So if the Raiders can get – if they can figure out a way to get a sixth-round rookie middle linebacker and two undersized defensive tackles to start getting pushed up the middle, you've got
potential.
We'll see in 2017 for that. But
right,
for season,
but the offense is picking up the slack right now, and the defense is good enough. They're generating turnovers. Carl Joseph's hitting people hard. Sean Smith's playing better and better every week. So, and Emerson's getting healthy and starting to play better. I mean, this is a guy who has only started.
Right, but what,
I wonder if that's the sort of thing you can also kind of generate in a slightly trickster way with more kind of like stunt blitzing and things like that to try and just like bring the unexpected pressure up the middle, just have people running to the line at the last minute, you know, bringing rushers in from the secondary more quickly. Now, obviously, that would require what we were talking about, to have them playing together more as a team so that, you know, you're not worried that you're leaving the back unguarded there. But, you know, we've seen teams do that before, kind of like fake an interior pass rush with more like linebacker and safety blitzing.
I think this is why people are talking about Norton's job being, you know, on the ropes right now. And it's because there isn't a lot of creativity.
Norton, who's Norton? Just
Ken Norton, who is the Raiders defensive coordinator, former linebacker. He's just not being real creative up front. And I think that if you had somebody more like a Vic Fangio,
so doesn't
who
that,
knows how to stunt blitzes really, really well.
So had some creativity in the defense. But yeah. Okay, so what? Let me, because we talk about the Raiders a lot. We know the Raiders really well. Chiefs is a team that we should be paying attention to, okay? Chiefs usually become relevant at the end of the season, so we should definitely not just ignore the Chiefs, even though they got absolutely butchered. But butchered by the Steelers in their last game, 43-14. They are coming off a bye. That's the one circumstantial variable that we should have a little bit of respect for here.
Yeah,
is that they are coming off a bye.
Here's the thing with the Chiefs, right? They're like the opposite of what Tony just said about the Raiders. Like, the Raiders' defense is not living up to its potential because the talent isn't gelling. The Chiefs' defense has lost talent. So it's just like a much more... it's a much more cut and dry thing. The Chiefs defense just doesn't have the talent, you know, without Justin Houston in there, you know, without that sort of the contributions that they've been getting from their sort of older, better players in the past, we're just not seeing that this year. And they may just not have the horses to do it.
Yeah, okay. They've lost a ton of pieces. But the other thing is, like, you've got to have a lot of talent around Andy Reid to make up for his lack of ability.
Decision-making?
Yeah.
His in-game decision-making is pretty horrible.
He's awful. And I continue to hate on the guy every year, and I'm going to keep doing it.
Yeah, well, you're not the only one. It's pretty easy to do. All right, wrapping it up on Oakland versus Kansas City. I would again, these are both division games. You always want to be careful with division games. I am scared. I am also scared of this Chiefs-Raiders game. I feel like... I mean, I know you hate on Andy Reid, but I think there is some quality coaching in him. And with that extra bye week, I just think it's a good reason to stay away from this game. Emotional win. I know you don't like the emotional hangover analysis, but it is a factor here for people.
You always throw it around and it's not a factor. It's never a factor.
It might be. Well,
you
we'll
always
see.
Say it's never a factor.
It's never a factor.
Here's what's a factor. The Raiders
jerk.
Played the Chiefs really close last year twice when the Chiefs were much better and the Raiders weren't quite as good.
Okay.
The tables have turned. The Raiders are much better. The Chiefs are much worse than last year. And it's more than enough to get a one-point victory for the Raiders at home.
All right.
And that's what the point spread. It's, right. it's a one-point
So you take the Chargers and the Raiders, and I'm going to take the Broncos and the Chiefs, all right? Just for the contrarian versus contrarian here. I'm actually not going to touch either one of those games. Like I said, this scared the death out of me. Okay. The team that bounced back last week, or kind of, with Brady coming back, I guess is the way to put that. New England Patriots hosting the Cincinnati Bengals. This looked like it was going to be a lot better game before the season started. Now the Bengals are kind of in free fall right here. I don't know what's going on with the Bengals. Do you think there's any chance this is their bounce back game, guys? I don't. I feel like the Patriots keep putting up going no huddle and putting all the pressure on the Bengals offense to keep up. Bad coaching takes over, and it's a 3-touchdown blowout. Anybody have any different analysis?
I think the Bengals are in the same boat as the Chiefs. They've got subpar coaching. They've got a subpar quarterback. They lost too many pieces from the defense, and you're seeing it on the field
so
on Sunday.
Big personality shift from the Bengals from last year to this year.
Yeah, I mean, the Bengals are definitely not the Bills. They're not going to shut the Patriots out at home.
Well, and combine it on the other side with they lost. Okay, yeah. We're the small gloss right over that. Add also, though, to the fact, like, it's not just that they lost pieces on the defense. They lost pieces on the offense, too. And losing all those secondary wide receivers that didn't seem like it was that big a deal at the time. But now you're seeing a fairly one-dimensional Bengals offense that can put up a ton of points if the defense they're up against sucks enough to just let A.J. Green run wild all over the field.
Right, is that the only thing
that
they
have? And if they don't, and frankly, the Patriots defense, which, you know, has still been a work in progress, I would say. But again, like, you want to make a big deal out of the Bills blowout. They scored 13 total points in that game. It was the Patriots offense that was the problem as much as anything else.
Absolutely.
And special teams. So, you know, there's just no way that the Patriots are going to let A.J. Green beat them in this game. And therefore, they're going to have to do it with the Giovanni Bernards and, you know, whoever else is of the world. And I don't see that happening, right?
Yeah, I think this is the nail in the coffin for the Bengals season.
Okay.
Honestly, I think they're going to lose this game, and I don't think they're going to recover from
it. 2-3, it'd be 2-4.
Yeah, I think there's too many good teams in the AFC right now for the Bengals to get back into the playoffs. I think they're one of those teams, one of those five we talked about.
That seems pretty likely. With the emergence of a few other teams, you know, a general friskiness, like the Steelers basically 100% putting their foot down on that division so far.
Yeah.
You're watching the Ravens fade, which we all sort of expected to happen.
New.
You know, you're watching the Bengals, like, really implode, and you know, I mean, what,
we'll see. Though I don't know. I mean, it's still pretty. It's still early, and the Ravens are one game back from the Steelers. And let's just move on to that game. I mean, Ravens.
They are
Ravens
now starting to look like the team. Everybody knew that was a real fake 3-0.
Yeah,
and you're seeing it now.
Fair enough.
You're just seeing.
But they are
Joe
playing.
Flacco plays like an ass. Like,
but you are.
Know.
They are playing a team.
Fired their
hold on a second.
Coordinator.
They are playing.
That's not a good.
They are playing.
Games.
Even though he was Mark Trestman, to be fair.
They are playing a team in the New York Giants that is very dysfunctional. So I do actually feel like the Ravens have a decent chance of winning this game. The Giants are in disarray.
It's true. If there's any team that's currently effing up more than the Ravens in kind of the exact same way, it's the Giants, because the Giants just can't get anything right. They can't get that offense going. They massively overpaid for, like, slightly above average replacement players.
The only reason this team had any buzz coming out of the offseason was because it's in New York. Come on, let's talk.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the truth.
People
the Giants
blow up
like
the Giants on paper.
Every year. But just so you know how the league didn't treat them well this year. That was the first time since 2007 where an away Monday Night Football team played an away game the following week. So the league really screwed them over with some circumstances. I know we talked about that briefly last week.
Let's
move quickly through
in the
week.
Era of Thursday night games. That doesn't mean as much anymore because it's Monday night is no longer like the big. It's a bigger obstacle to play on a Sunday and have to play again on a Thursday than it is to play on a Monday and then play on a Sunday.
If you're an away Monday night football game, it's tough to go back and play another away game.
Listen, how often do you see a team go out, spend a ton of money on free agents, a subpar team spend a ton of money on free agents, and have that be the answer?
That's usually called the Washington Redskins, and it doesn't work.
Right, it doesn't work. And the Giants try it, it's not working.
All
right,
so Ravens +3 at Giants -3. Obviously, probably a game that you don't want to get involved with just because of the randomness of these two teams. I feel like either team could win this game on any day. I don't really have a strong opinion about it.
At one of these games, you got to figure out Odell Beckham will break out. He's too talented not to. But, like, you know, that's all you're really talking about. Like, if the Giants can string together a couple huge plays, then maybe they blow – then maybe they blow the Ravens out. Whereas the Ravens will probably have to win at this point since they don't really have as much big playability. It'd be Steve Smith and Terrence West beating you. So, you know, this game is either going to be like a 30-14 Giants win or like a 17-10 Ravens win. That's what I would say.
This is a false hope matchup. Whoever wins this is going to give their fans false hope that they're actually turning the team.
There you go.
Yeah, but actually, what they're doing is playing another team.
That's a good label. Yeah. We should use that label more often. That's a good label. Hope. That's what the NFL is for most fans, is false hope.
But it's also specifically at this time of year, that's a particularly pronounced thing because you're looking at people haven't entirely let their dreams from the preseason die, which is when everybody talks themselves into it.
Yeah.
And you still have fans of teams like, especially the Ravens, because they were talking themselves into that 3-0 start, being like, you see, like, nobody believes in us, this and that, but nobody believes in you because you're not nearly as good as your record right now, and you're clearly trending in the wrong direction.
Yeah, this is a game between two people who are playing to see who's going to pick 20th and who's going to pick 21st in the first round of the NFL draft.
I don't know, man. There's a lot of other bad teams out there. Anyway,
I'm not betting on it for
so Panthers Saints, we're not ignoring that game, but it has not yet been posted because people don't know if Cam Newton's going to play. I think no matter what, it's going to be kind of a scary game. I mean, if you know, I don't know. Maybe if you see the
over, if anything.
Yeah.
I just keep betting the over with New Orleans, and I keep winning, so I'm just going to keep doing it until they don't cover.
Very good, Tony. I like that. Gets a good attitude. All right, Steelers, Dolphins. Steelers -7.5 at the Dolphins. This is the second in my
Dieter. Can't make that line high enough.
This is like okay. So there's. So we did the Dieter teaser last week. We'll do it again this week, but this week will be a little bit different, right? So there's two foundational bets and two bets on top, or two games on top. The two foundational picks this week for the Dieter teaser, so these are picks like if you're just into the conservative methodology, this might be a good idea. Tease down the Pats to -2 or -2.5, depending on where you get it, and tease down the Steelers to -1.5 at the Dolphins. Pats are obviously playing the Bengals. We just talked about that. Those seem like two reliable favorites to handle business. They're in this part of the season where the front runners handle business against weak teams like this. So Steelers, I think they're actually good at -7.5. Dolphins have been demoralized, you know, after the first few weeks of the season, especially losing to the Titans in the way that they did this last weekend. For those of you who didn't see it, the Titans were able to take control in the fourth quarter, and their victory was never in doubt. I was actually – we'll talk about the Titans in a minute. I was very impressed with the way that they handled business. I know it's against the Dolphins, but these up-and-coming teams, these teams that are trying to get out of the basement, it's those kinds of wins that help them do that. So Steelers -7.5 at the Dolphins. Away favorites, usually you want to be careful. But for this one, I think it's a hands-down, pretty much straight-up easy pick.
This Pittsburgh offense is just rounding into form now. With Le'Veon back, working him back in there – Antonio playing as well as ever. Plenty of backup options. Roethlisberger looking healthy and good. I just don't see how the Dolphins are going to do anything. I think, you know, this is the writing's on the wall for Tannehill this year. So, if anything, you're going to get the worst version of him that presses more, throws more interceptions, bounces more passes in front of receivers, does all the shitty Ryan Tannehill things.
He's so bad.
He's terrible.
He's a $100 million quarterback.
Yeah. Yeah, because he had one good half of a season and they massively overreacted to it.
It's like the Matt Castle thing. Like, you just get paid and get out. Like, yeah, get that guaranteed money and then go retire.
I think this is a great opportunity to make that 30% return on your money guaranteed. Do a 10-point teaser with the Pats and the Steelers. I mean, do you really
need 10 points? Why do you need 10 points? You're going to take a hit on the odds.
I don't care about the odds. I just want to make sure that I go the other direction with it so that I've got all I need is a win. All I want is a win from the Pats and a win from the Steelers.
Oh, dude, I think – okay, Gilman, can you weigh in on this? Because you're going to take a huge hit on the odds, Tony.
I don't care. I'm not looking to get rich off one game. I'm telling you, if you want 30%.
It's not about getting rich. It's about making profitable plays. Patriots -2.5.
30% is not a good return on your money?
Not as good as even odds or just under even odds.
I'm just saying play it safe.
I think Steelers -1.5 at Dolphins and Patriots coming home for Brady's homecoming game at -2.5 against the Bengals.
And then the Steelers who are in the,
those are very
yeah.
Money. You're losing. You're leaving money on the table with that strategy, Tony. I'm sorry, you're just wrong. Go ahead, Gilman. You go ahead and weigh in, and then we'll keep talking
about
other stuff.
All I'm saying is, I guess I don't know. You could see a scenario in which, you know, the Patriots don't score a ton of points,
mm-hmm.
and the Bengals, you know,
make
score
it competitive
enough at the end to keep them mm-hmm. in it. The Patriots are pretty big fans of letting the lead get weirdly close in the fourth quarter, even if they were blowing them out in the first half. I kind of am going to go with Tony on this one just because a sure thing is always better than a big swing.
I'll take 30% for sure over 50% for maybe.
Maybe -2.5. Patriots -2.5.
Go ahead, bet it.
I already did.
There you
all right. All right, Jags, Bears. All right, Tony, go ahead and have this one, bro. I have nothing to say about this game.
I just want to point this out because I love to point it out every time it happens. Josh McCown played way better than Jay Cutler when he took over. Brian Hoyer, 3 games as a Bears quarterback.
Stud.
Absolute fucking stud. 72% completions, over 1,000 yards passing, 3 consecutive games over 300 yards passing. This last week, 354 yards passing.
Yep.
5th highest number in the history of the Bears franchise.
He's breaking the mold.
With the same offense that Jay Cutler couldn't get on the field with.
Jay who?
And he's got 6 touchdowns against 0 interceptions.
Boom.
And that's Brian effing Hoyer playing stud. Without Kevin White.
He's the man, dude. Scarface.
That's how
Jay Cutler. Jay Cutler's Jay the dumb, Cutler ugly, fat friend.
He's the what?
The dumb, ugly, fat friend. Jay makes the other girls look better.
Jay Cutler is so awful. The fact that Brian Hoyer, without Kevin White, is putting up these numbers, and Cutler's sitting there watching with the sprained thumb up his ass. If Cutler ever gets back on the field for the Bears again, I'm never coming back to them.
Now, the Kevin White thing may be a bit of a brick. On in an ongoing way, unfortunately, that may be a draft pick wasted. But
he looks so good when he plays.
I like the Jags. I like the Jags on the upset coming off a bye week after that London.
But what
game.
What have the Jags showed you? I mean, this is.
I'm just kidding. I don't want anything to do with this game. This is a 2 shitty teams game, like we've talked about a million times.
It's a 2 shitty teams game. The Bears are at home.
We should clean up our language, favored. By the way. But whatever.
Why? Who cares?
Well, because we're trying to...
for a coaching change in Jacksonville.
I think it's time for a coaching change in Jacksonville. I think it's time for a permanent quarterback change in Chicago.
All right.
But yeah, don't bet on this game just because Brian Hoyer's going to throw for 400.
So here's a fun question. Is there any team in the league that would actually want Jay Cutler right now that could use him? Because there are certainly teams that have worse quarterbacks
Absolutely.
Than Jay Cutler.
No, there aren't. You name me one team who's got a worse quarterback than a guy who cannot beat Brian Hoyer for a starting job.
I don't know, man.
I have to think about it.
The Cleveland Browns, Charlie Whitehurst played last week.
Yeah, but you can't just put a question to people and just be like, your silence speaks for itself.
I'd take Tyrod Taylor over Jay Cutler any game.
Okay, moving on to a game that's actually kind of, a lot of people have this game in their survivor pools, 49ers at Bills. Bills home cooking after a 3-game win streak for the Buffalo Bills and Rex Ryan. And we love the Ryan brothers on this show. Everybody, the whole commentary about the Bills this past like 10 days, I'm like, oh man, I hope the Bills don't fire Rex, dude. He's good for the league. You need a guy, a personality like that. I mean, ultimately just being like, he's just a placeholder within the culture of the league. Never going to be competitive. Never going to go on a big playoff run. With that said, Bills minus 7.5. Hosting the Niners. I like the Bills to win. I like them to cover. The Niners are in disarray. They got quarterback issues. They're a West Coast team in the early time slot. All sorts of organizational problems showing up on the field for the San Francisco. This is as much of a bet against the Niners as it is for the Bills. Obviously, this is a 2 bad teams game that you want to be careful of.
How can you say the Bills are a bad team?
All right, there we go. Well, that's where I was going.
How can you say that?
The Bills are not a bad team.
Because they are perceived.
They're going to the playoffs.
Shut up and listen. They are perceived to be a bad team by many, where I was going to open it up and lead it to you. Give me another 15 seconds.
No, you're covering your ass. You said they were a bad team, and we both.
Well, now we'll never know. Well, now we'll never know, because you have terrible freaking manners when it comes to being on radio.
You just hate Rex Ryan. Rex Ryan has already been deep in the playoffs with a different
long time ago.
Yeah, that's long time ago. And he's dealing with kind of a fluky win after the Jets imploded after that.
He's dealing with the loss of Shaq Lawson, Reggie Ragland. He's got all kinds of pieces missing.
This game, this game.
And he's still got this team on a 3-game winning streak, including you hating, because it's the only time in the history of Gillette Stadium the Pats have been shut out, and it happened at the hands of Rex Ryan.
No, it happened at the hands of the Pats' third-string quarterback with a thumb injury.
And
let's
Rex
all relax.
Ryan.
Enough about
but
the Pats.
Here's the thing. It's not really Rex Ryan that's getting them here. It's LeSean McCoy.
Yeah. Boom,
LeSean
McCoy
is killing it, looking just like the stud that he was in Philadelphia way back when. All of a sudden, like, he's got those super slick cuts that he used to have.
Yeah,
he looks as good. And, like, this is fairly unprecedented. You don't get into your, like, mid-30s as a running back and start looking like you did in your late 20s. Like, it's awesome.
This is my extreme pick of the week.
Okay.
Shady McCoy rushes for 250 yards and 4 touchdowns against the man who
Daily
sent
fantasy
him
play.
Packing from Philadelphia and blew up what was a burgeoning team. Chip Kelly coming home to roost.
Yeah, do not underestimate the Chip Kelly revenge factor. I like that.
Dude.
Extra motivation for LeSean McCoy is already playing well. There you go.
He's going to rip
the
Niners.
After racist Chip Kelly cut him just for being an African-American.
So for the listeners, because we do have a lot of casual NFL fans, give me a 30 seconds on what the relationship is there, Gilman.
Oh, well, basically just that Chip Kelly shipped LeSean McCoy out of town, and there were fairly heated accusations that racism was playing a part in that. Now, I'm not sure that, you know, we can really go ahead and sign off on that, but...
It's not like he's the coach of the Redskins.
What I do think is true is that Chip Kelly still has to this day a very college football, and specifically like smaller program college football mentality that says, I'm the coach, I'm the only thing that matters, you're not allowed to be an individual, you're not allowed to express your personality
system,
here.
Yeah.
And I don't blame any black athletes for reading that as being slightly racist in its paternal overtones. Like, I'm not sure that's a conscious thing, but I certainly don't blame anyone for feeling that way, and especially the way that he dealt with it, which wasn't to say, oh, LeSean's a great talent, but we're moving in a different direction. He basically was just like, I don't need him, I'm too good for this, and proceeded to completely bottom out a talented and promising Philadelphia team that had to sell their entire, draft pick future just to go get a franchise quarterback to make some noise again.
The same thing with, you had DeSean Jackson and Shady McCoy on that team, and the mm-hmm. coach came in and said, I don't want these two guys.
I'd like to turn that into Riley Cooper and Ryan Matthews.
Yeah,
Jesus Christ.
Good job, Chip Kelly.
All right, so the Dieter teaser, the two picks we already talked about, the foundational ones, Steelers and Patriots. I add the Bills, and we're going to talk about it in a minute, the Titans, to the other two games
on
top.
Well,
that's what I'm saying, is that unlike last week where I had basically the same level of confidence in all four picks, this week what I'm saying is Patriots-Steelers, I have a ton of confidence. I'm like 80% confident on those two picks, right? These next two picks, a little bit riskier, but I do like the circumstances with the Bills home cooking against a team in disarray.
So you're talking 6 points on each
so
game,
six,
right?
Yes, teasing down. So Bills -1.5.
So what about
basically a straight
Dallas
up pick.
Plus 10.
Listen, no, hold on. I'm just talking about the Dieter teaser now. We'll get into other options, which I want to do. And then the fourth
game. I don't
know
why you're going with Tennessee.
Because these are home.
I believe it. I buy Tennessee.
Because these, yeah. Well, okay, let's open it up in just
I
a second. It's another home cooking game. And also it has to do with their opponent. Whenever you're talking about picks, don't just think about, oh, I like this team. Think about you hate the opposing team.
Yeah.
If you don't hate the opposing team, then you might want to think twice about getting involved in that game because they might be able to pull out some random special team stuff that you don't know about or win the turnover battle. Anyway, real quick, the Titans, I alluded to earlier, grew up a lot, I feel like, at the Dolphins this last week, putting the hurt on them in the second half and having a very nice, decisive, what I like to call mature win. Home cooking against the team in the Browns that is basically already waiting
complete
for the offseason.
Football. Charlie Whitehurst is stock. Like,
yeah.
So my pick here is, again, Titans favorite -7. I think you're good. You're definitely good on the teaser at -1, and you're probably good at Titans covering a touchdown.
I mean, here's one thing about the Titans I will say, because I can actually talk myself into this. I'm hesitant to say it, but I wasn't really thinking about the other side of the matchup, like you were saying. The Browns are atrocious, and I do think that the Titans are at least trending in the right direction. But really the most important thing is, just like we talked about the resurgence of LeSean McCoy, all of a sudden, with Tennessee, we have DeMarco Murray playing as well as he did 2 years ago, or at least adjusted for the line that he's playing behind. But DeMarco Murray is looking really good and young and spry, and he's not as dynamic as LeSean McCoy. But at least what you can say is, if you are a team with a really good running back that can consistently grind out yards, then you're not going to let a game get away from you in the same way. You're not going to go up a little bit and then take your foot off the gas, because you can always fall back on running the ball.
Yeah, and they've got some insurance there with Henry in the backfield. I a couple weeks ago, you did miss this, when J.J. Watt was done for the season, and Dieter and I said Titans are going to win the South.
Sure,
and
I remember
Dieter
that.
Said Titans are not going to win the South. Now they've got a mature win under the belt. He's betting on. So, but
I didn't say the whole. You're talking about winning the division. I'm talking about this week's game.
I think the Titans. I think the Titans were already mature before last week. I think they proved it last week. I think they're going to prove it again against the Browns. I think this is a team that's not just trending up, but they have built themselves in the right way to win a weak division. And particularly weak division where the Jaguars, who I did think were going to be much better, have already tanked.
Okay. Well, I'm just making a little bit of a guess here on the Titans and how they're playing. And also, like, you know, what Gilman, thank you for reemphasizing, is the Browns. I mean, they are just in free-for-all. The Titans can, yeah, I think, you know, actually, Tony, you're helping me out with your analysis as well. Is they can see the division win within their grasp.
Hashtag yep. Free Terrell Pryor. Let's see on a real team.
So another team that's on a bit of a win streak, except up until this last week against the Bills, the Los Angeles Rams going to the Lions. I don't want to spend too much time on this game because it's just a weird game. I don't know what to think of this game. I don't really have a strong opinion one way or the other. Rams plus three, Lions minus three. Over.
Sure, or it could be the opposite of that. Yeah. This is definitely a two bad teams game.
Do not
the bet. Rams, just like the Ravens, their record is a fluke. It's an illusion. You know, that what you will say for them is that they do one thing well. They have a sick, nasty defensive line. And those guys are showing up, and they're kind of helping them steal some games. But Case Keenum is a below-replacement-level quarterback. He's probably the worst quarterback in the league right now. Or the worst one not named Jay Cutler, if you want to be
Thank you.
specific about it. But I mean, the fact that he's so bad and the fact that they still don't trust Jared Goff to go out there... I don't know, man. Like, what do you see in this
game? I don't
know.
Do you have any thoughts on this game?
I think that the secondary is pretty sick, too. I think it's not just the defensive line. Okay. I think it's, the secondary is pretty sick, too. I still think they've got a bad coach. I still think Case Keenum can't get the job done. But Todd Gurley is one of the best young running backs in the game.
Right.
And he's averaging less than 3 yards a carry because he's...
They're getting him out in space. Look at his numbers when he's catching the ball, receiving the ball, getting downfield, making bigger plays. And he's not getting any carries out of the backfield because people are stacking the box because they can't go downfield.
Yeah.
But having said that, the Lions ain't no great shakes either. They're at home, but does that even matter? I mean, do the Lions have a home field advantage?
I don't know.
I'm just trying to.
I'm waiting till you guys are done talking so we can move on to the next game.
Don't bet this game.
Yeah, don't bet this game.
Don't watch it unless you're a Rams or a Lions.
Because I think this next one that we're going to talk about is interesting. The NFC East. For some reason, I've always liked this matchup: the Philadelphia Eagles versus the Washington Racial Slurs. What do we think, guys? -2.5 for the Eagles. I like the Redskins in the home cooking circumstances as well. There's a good vibe going on with the Redskins right now, whereas the Eagles are kind of like stumbling a little bit. They're dealing with their first loss. This is a division game, so you always want to be careful with division games. What you guys alluded to earlier, I think might be a decent play here. Home dog, tease it up to Redskins at +8.5. Or if you're like Tony and you like the huge teaser spreads, you can tease this up into his 12-point teaser and make it Redskins +14.5 at home in a division rivalry game. You're probably pretty good with that.
That seems very safe.
Yeah, I think the Redskins are finally starting to play to their level. And again, you've got DeSean Jackson against the Eagles. I love that matchup. And Carson Wentz looked human against Detroit last week.
Tough win for the Redskins last week. I was impressed.
The Redskins are playing like the team I thought they were going to be when I picked them in our fantasy draft. Finally, thank God. They've got a good roster. They had a good roster when they won the division last year. They are a little undercoached, but DeSean Jackson makes Kirk Cousins a good quarterback.
He's so dynamic.
The Redskins are on a 3-game win streak. All kinds of momentum.
I think they push it to 4 here.
Okay, me too. I agree. What do you think, Gilman? Any big thoughts on this one? Well, it's a weird game because it's the NFC.
I'm not
going to
bet on it.
Bet on it. I would feel perfectly safe, you know, teasing them to some double-digit, you know, number at home because I think that's pretty safe. At the same time, like, you're right that this should probably be an entertaining game. I expect to see some points scored. You know, I think the Eagles' offense will bounce back a bit, but, you know, I also think the Skins' offense will look pretty good. So, yeah, to be fair, this is probably... Let's see. So that's still a morning game, right? That's the last of the morning games.
That we're going to talk about. Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I wonder how much TV time it'll get. But you look at the rest of these matchups, and maybe in terms of like an actual entertaining matchup that looks close,
probably the best one of the morning.
It might be the best one of the morning. Yeah,
probably the best one of the morning. Okay, so pay attention to that one. Watch out for the Eagles-Redskins. I'm psyched to see how this Eagles team... I don't know, these are just... after the Giants and Cowboys, I'm just like, ugh. Like, I've seen enough of the Giants and Cowboys to make me sick over the years. For some reason, with this new quarterback and coach... Well, we'll talk about the Cowboys in a minute, for sure. With the new quarterback and the new coach and the Eagles, I like that. Kind of a fresh start for that organization. And the Redskins, I just love Kirk Cousins. I mean, how can you not root for that guy? I mean, he's just a good human being. And
like
those can be hard to come by in professional sports. All right. One of the teams, the next two games are two of the sexier matchups this week. I think most people would agree. Falcons at Seahawks, Cowboys at Packers. Falcons are getting 6. A little surprised by the size of that number. Falcons at the Seahawks, Falcons +6 coming off a bye for the Seahawks. Falcons coming off a huge win at the Broncos. Yes, the Broncos struggled with their quarterback injury, but the Falcons took it to them from the get-go. They clearly did their research on playing at Mile High. Like, you got to get out, you got to start fast and get a lead in that first half because the fatigue is going to, the thin air is going to catch up with you in that second half. But the Falcons, surprisingly tough, surprisingly well coached and prepared for that win.
Surprisingly versatile is what I would say. Yeah. We were talking about this a little bit before we started.
Jaquizz Rodgers and Mohamed Sanu had just made their presence known in this game. They blew it out the box as far as that, because up until now, it was basically like if you shut down Julio Jones, then, you know, it's going to be tough for the Falcons to move the ball. But
that's the point, is they also have a running attack now. So that can't be understated as well. They are a multidimensional offense, and as long as the coaching can keep up with that, then they have different ways to beat teams. If they're good enough to game plan for individual teams and prepare an offense that's tailor-made for each, you know, opponent that they're playing, which sounds like kind of a no-brainer, but not every team in the league does that. Right. And they have the weapons to do it right now. So, you know, we all thought that this last game, this Denver game, would show us a lot about them. And I think a lot of us also suspected that this would be where, you know, the defense might get exposed a little bit, even though the Denver offense is no great shakes. But I think we actually saw a little bit from the defense stepping up and looking like they at least were frisky. And the thing is, a team like this with a super, you know, a very good offense and at least some pedigreed players on defense, like, it's, you know, you can be the Super Bowl Saints team that isn't ever going to be a top 15 defense. But if they're, you know, the 17th or 18th best defense instead of the 28th, that's a huge difference. And that can be the difference between, you know, being a championship contender and being a team with a great offense that can't do anything.
If they can keep Julio Jones healthy and on the field, then this team, I honestly think this could be a Super Bowl caliber team.
Okay.
Problem is, they've got to go through the Seahawks to get to the Super Bowl. And the Seahawks are just loaded. I mean,
yeah, but they got O-line issues. So coming off a bye week, they should have
wondered if Atlanta's the team that can blow up that O-line.
Talking about matchups, Atlanta's the last team in the league to take advantage of that.
Okay, fine. So, but for the purpose, you're kind of having alluding to a little bit of a longer conversation there about, you know, who's going to be dominant, who are going to be the dominant teams in the NFC.
Well, the Falcons are playing the Seahawks this week.
Right. So here we go. I mean, I tried really hard to find if the Falcons stayed on the West Coast. I always like when they do that, when the teams stay, like, in the time zone, when they're playing, you know, a long-distance game. I don't think that they did. I think it's just so smart to stay in the time zone, go to some freaking resort, take the whole team to some freaking resort, get them all treated.
Some of these,
you know, like,
some of these
like hang out,
union,
do nothing but watch film and walkthroughs.
Some of these NFL players' union roles are really taking wins out of them. Out of the column for some of these teams, because I think this is a union thing where they have to return home. Like, they can't expect the players to stay.
Not every game. I know the Patriots on a number of occasions have stayed on the West Coast. I know that.
But there's more specific moving pieces that can affect that. Also, depending on, you know, like, how many road games you've had in the last, like, week or two beforehand, and there are some other elements other than just wherever you were the week before. So.
Anyway,
it's definitely possible.
Anyway, Falcons with the points then, if you're going to get involved with this game. I mean, teasing up the points at plus 12. I mean, probably just sit back, relax, and enjoy some great football, because I could see, I mean, Seahawks getting a turnover that, you know, Bennett comes out and decides to get three strip sacks. You know, I mean, that could happen.
I think you tease down the Seahawks.
Oh, you think Seahawks are definitely going to win this game?
I think the Seahawks are going to win this game. I think you tease them down. They're at home. They're coming off a bye. They've got a sick defense. Atlanta has not faced a defense like this yet.
I don't know.
And the Seahawks
Broncos D was pretty fucking good.
Yeah.
I mean, what are you talking about, man? The Broncos D is right up there with the Seahawks D.
Well, I don't know. Arguably right now, because
we're seeing a little bit of Tony's love for the Seahawks.
Well,
right
no,
now.
I mean, when you talk about a defense, you
know
have
the heart, Tony.
When you talk about a defense, you have to talk about how long they're going to be on the field.
Okay.
And
that's absolutely.
There's a big difference between how long the Broncos were on the field. That hurts your defense because your offense can't do anything to support you. This is a balanced team in Seattle. This is a team that can put up 35 points on you and shut you out.
Well, I can't wait to see. I think it's going to be a tight one, though, man. I think
it's tight. I think Seattle wins it by three or more, but I would tease down the Seahawks.
I think the Falcons are. I mean, you know, maybe there's an emotional hangover from taking down the current Super Bowl champions.
Hangovers.
We'll see.
Like hangover. You like that word because you're always.
All right, Gilman, give us some parting thoughts on the Falcons Seahawks.
I don't really have any, to be honest with you, or at least nothing that we haven't said yet. I mean, I don't strongly favor either side of that bet. As constructed, I wouldn't bet the game straight up on that line because, you know, I think that's a pretty well set line.
Do you think getting the teasing down the Seahawks to a pick'em is a wise play? I mean, do you think the Falcons can win this game?
I do think the Falcons can win this game, so I wouldn't want to do that. Yeah, if I feel safe with anything, it's probably just teasing the Falcons up to plus 12 or something like that, where at least like you figure it's going to be a pretty close game because Atlanta should still be able to put up some points. Like I said, they're a balanced attack, and the Seahawks defense is great, but if they can play as well coached as they did this last week, then I expect them to throw a lot of different things at the Seahawks and stick with some moves that work. So I do expect them. I don't expect them to be shut out or put in the single digits or anything like that.
No, I don't expect that either.
So to me, the real question is Russell Wilson's health. If over this bye week he was able to get back to the Russell Wilson that we know, because God knows his game is at a high enough level right now, even when he is banged up. But, he's always one knockdown away from not being as mobile back there, and that flips everything instantly. Boom. So I really just want to watch this game. I want to see what the bye week did for the Seahawks.
Yeah.
I think there are plenty of scenarios where they could come out of this game looking like the most dangerous team in the NFC.
Absolutely.
But there's other scenarios where the Falcons actually step up to the task. So I'm just curious to watch.
The Seahawks got a little hooked up with the early bye week this year. They needed it. They had some serious problems. Then we'll see.
But it's all circumstantial, Like
it could have been anything else. But I'm just saying it worked out for them well because they had some issues that had they
Russell
been,
Wilson
had to go
especially
on the road.
Needed this week.
Yeah. I don't think the Falcons have beaten a team this or faced a team this year, frankly, that has a tight end like Jimmy Graham available to the offense. And I think that they are.
But Jimmy Graham being a good fit in this offense is a very recent phenomenon.
Right, that's just starting. That's just starting.
But that's the point, isn't it? I mean, it's just they're just getting rolling.
But you can't incorporate it into the now. It hasn't been proven yet that Jimmy Graham is.
Oh, I think it has.
A big, okay, well, for me, this will be the game. This will be the game where I come to an opinion about that because I still
have money on the fact that I already saw it.
Okay, Tony, you're the man, dude. Yeah, go cure cancer. All right, Cowboys plus four at
Jimmy Graham beats the Falcons alive.
Okay, Cowboys plus four at Packers is the next sexiest game, in my opinion, of the week. And actually, I think this actually might end up being the sexiest game of the week because I think this is dun-dun-dun-dun, upset special, baby. The Ice Bowl all over again, except this time the Cowboys win in Green Bay. I was not impressed.
How much of an upset is it, though?
It's not. Well, it's only a four-point upset, obviously. But it's not as big as I'm leading on because I think the Packers did not indicate to me that they are nearly as laser sharp focused as they should be at this
Packers
point in the season.
Yeah, the Packers are not clicked into place yet.
The way that they let the Giants, there was like five or six really awesome opportunities in that second half against the Giants this most recent week for the Packers and Aaron Rodgers offense to take control, put up another back-to-back touchdowns, and just make it completely unreachable for the Giants. What do you know? They don't get first downs. They don't continue to hold on to the ball like they usually did in years past. And now the Giants have a chance of winning the game there at the end. I mean, what's I don't know. I mean, Tony, I know you're a big NFC North guy, so I'm interested to hear your perspective on this. But I was really impressed with the way the Cowboys absolutely destroyed the Cincinnati Bengals this most recent week. They seem like they got a good thing going on down there in Big D. Do they take it up to the cheese factory and handle business?
I love how your analysis is always a week late when we're supposed to be predicting the future. And you're always talking about, well, last week they finally showed me when, like, had you just anticipated it, you could have made some money.
Why don't you talk about the game instead of my analysis?
So the Cowboys have looked good since preseason. The Cowboys have looked good since Dak Prescott took the field. They've got a killer offensive line. Anybody can play behind it. Tony Romo can play behind it as long as he stays healthy. They've got a killer running back. They've got a decent wide receiving crew. Jason Witten still looks good. Des Bryant, he's on the sidelines. He gets back. He's an absolute killer, too. Prescott is not in over his head. Defense is playing better than anybody thought. But
what
can they
the
go
matchup
to Green Bay?
Right, the matchup. What about the Packers?
See, this is the one problem, is that the one thing that this Cowboys offense is not equipped to do well right now is beat you deep. And that's kind of where you would like to see a team take shots at Green Bay if you're going to upset them at home. That having been said, they are so competent in every other aspect of the offensive attack, and their running game in particular is so damn good that if they don't get flustered, if they can prevent Aaron Rodgers from jumping out to an early lead, then they can methodically control this game. But it really is going to be all on the defense, and especially on those linebackers in that secondary, to stop Green Bay from putting up two scores early, you know? It can't be 14-3. It can't be 14-0. they have to prevent them. Even if Aaron Rodgers is driving the ball, they got to hold him to field goals so that they can control the game with that running attack, because they're not going to throw their way back into a game that they get out of.
So let me ask you this, because we all know that the Packers have an offensive identity, and I think the Cowboys do too, but we know that the Packers have had problems on defense. How does the Cowboys' defense stack up?
Well, they're playing pretty well right now.
Yeah, they're playing. They're playing better than anybody could have anticipated.
Okay, because see that to me, even their owner, the way you talk about, I mean, the way that's the team to me seems a crucial matchup. I think the Cowboys will get down the field, be able to at least get field goals. I mean, hopefully they don't turn the ball over too much.
Morris Claiborne shut down AJ Green this week.
Yeah,
and I'm not saying it was exclusively him, because there were a lot of problems there, but that was a guy that they'd basically given up on. And so if all of a sudden you have play like that in your secondary. And again, so much of it comes from these teams that are young and up and coming, feeling themselves, being into it, knowing that they can compete. Because everybody's going to get burned once in a while, but if you're feeling yourself, you shake it off and you get back out there. And Dallas is playing with a lot of confidence on every level right now. So if they can keep doing that, that will make a world of difference. If they stick him on, Jordy Nelson, who is really not Jordy Nelson at this point,
right.
And he can start shutting them down. Then, yeah, like, I could see it happening. I certainly could.
Yeah, I could see Ezekiel Elliott absolutely taking over this game. But this is the one to me that's sit back and watch. Like, this is the one that...
See, I'm having more confidence the more I think about this game. I'm having more and more confidence that the Cowboys are going to go into Green Bay and win. I don't know. Maybe it's just because I have too much confidence because I picked the Monday night upset. But anyway, it's going to be a good game. It's going to be a really good game. I am very surprised that this is not the Sunday night football game. The Sunday night football game is actually the Colts at the Texans. I don't know who.
Nobody will watch.
I don't know who made that decision. Oh, Dick Ebersol over at NBC Sports, usually a lot smarter than that.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened there, Dick. But Colts at Texans on Sunday Night Football. This is one of those, like, I feel like if the Colts are going to get...
It's a barn burner, by which I mean lock yourself in a barn and set it on fire.
This is one of those games I feel like if the Colts are going to get back and make a real run here, they kind of need
Colts
to do it
aren't
in this game.
Get back and make
come on.
What,
dude.
They beat the Bears by a score?
I'm just trying to offer something insightful.
Andrew Luck is being screwed out of his legacy more than any other quarterback in the game right now. It's just so sad to watch this dog crap team that they put around him. All these aging, crappy former stars that weren't even that good to begin with. And they just, you know, this is a team that gets rebuilt on the fly every year to its detriment. And this poor guy is stuck, you know, carrying water for them. And the Texans, by the way, made equally bad decisions because they laid out the farm
Frostwater.
For a guy that wasn't even that good during the season last year.
He wasn't good enough to stay on the field when the only other option was a one-legged, one-armed, half-blind Peyton Manning.
Wheelchair Manning?
It would be one thing if he put up crazy good numbers, but he didn't.
Right.
And all of a sudden, they just decided from what they'd seen of that he was their quarterback of the future. They backed up the Brinks truck for him, and they deserve what happens to them.
Can I just, like, quick side rant?
Sure.
Since we're on it, like, there's no point in talking about this fucking game anyways.
Yeah.
And we've got to fill some time here.
Go ahead.
So, how is it that the entire NFL, all these scouts, all these metrics, all these old systems, new systems, paper, statistics, tests, these people can't fucking pick out a quarterback to save their lives? Dak Prescott went in the fourth round. Derek Carr went, what, number 24 overall to the Raiders at the bottom? They traded up to get him. What was he, a third, fourth quarterback selected in that draft?
I think it's a really hard position. I think it's a really
Jared
hard position.
Goff goes number one overall. The Browns jump off of Wentz. He gets drafted and he looks like a world beater for 3 weeks. Explain to me what it is about the old science, the old way of doing things, that these guys are not willing to let go so that they can actually get a read on who can play quarterback in this league.
By that, do you mean the old way being you hold a clipboard for a couple years and then you start? What do you mean by that?
I am saying that I think the way they are evaluating players is old hat.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that the NFL has changed, and they have not changed the way they evaluate talent.
Can you get anything specific in terms of how those evaluation techniques?
Well, when was the last time they switched up what they do at the combine? Exactly. A 40 time doesn't fucking matter.
Well, the combine doesn't matter.
Yeah, but the combine doesn't matter.
But
none of it matters.
Okay, but we're talking about individual organizations struggling.
I'm talking about
a lot of 50% of organizations struggling to evaluate this
position.
Look,
even the Cowboys who drafted Dak Prescott waited to the fourth round to fucking do it. If they knew what he was going to be, he would have been gone in the first.
Right. The Patriots waited until the end of the draft to draft Tom Brady.
Didn't get Tom Brady.
But the point is, there's a couple different factors here that I've noticed. I would say the biggest one is definitely the kind of dumbed-down offenses that college football teams run. They really don't give you a lot to evaluate these quarterbacks on. Everybody wants to run some high-powered, you know, spread option kind of thing. And that, frankly, doesn't give you a whole lot. If anything, it makes these guys overthink themselves in the opposite direction because you say, well, that's not the offense we're going to run in college, so we don't really know what to evaluate it on. So just get the big guy with the good arm that looks good.
Yeah.
And
get the Brock Osweilers of the world. Give him $30 right. million dollars and then shit all over the field for 4 years waiting to figure out who the next head coach is going to be because he's going to get fired for picking Brock Osweiler.
But the bitch of it is, in order to evaluate players more like, you know, to find the Dak Prescotts, you almost have to dive even more deeply into the intangibles bin and be looking for, like,
personality.
That unflappability and
leadership
and personality. Like, but if you're trying to get Russell Wilson early or whatever, or Dak Prescott early, then you're going to also end up drafting a lot of totally overmatched
right.
college quarterbacks that led their, like, you know, 1AA teams to great success because they looked all slick and good when they were doing it. I mean, it's
the future of your franchise rests on who you put at that position.
I don't agree.
But I don't think, oh, of course it does.
I don't agree. What? No, hold on. I don't agree. Let me just.
Mr. Tom Brady.
Let me jump.
All
right, here we go.
Please,
Tony.
Give us your brilliant analysis.
Let's stay focused on the argument instead of who's delivering the argument, okay? That'd be a treat. So the observation that I would like to make at this point in the conversation is that there are two really good examples of retired quarterbacks now in the league. John Elway, obviously the best example, and then Jim Harbaugh, I think, is also very relevant, who were basically had free range to build the
– John Harbaugh?
No, Jim Harbaugh.
At least, but he's not in the league anymore. But Danger's got a point to make, so let him make it.
Sorry.
You're such an asshole. why do we even bring you on this show? So the point that I was trying to make was both of those guys had pretty much free range to build the type of team that they wanted, right? And they actively chose to emphasize the defensive identity of those teams. So they know how hard it is to be a really type of leadership quarterback that we're talking about.
Niners had a first overall pick quarterback.
And that's my point. The point is, why should it be so impossible to pick out a quarterback? That's my
whole argument. You're talking about Alex.
Alex Smith was highly drafted.
Right.
Why do we not
have... He wasn't the identity of the team. He wasn't the personality driver of the team.
No, but...
Like, he wasn't expected to be like Brady or Elway was. Like, I mean, it all funneled back to them. I mean, I think my counter to what the comment that you guys made is just that it's all about the quarterback. Absolutely, in the postseason, your job, every other aspect of the team's job is to make sure it's within a possession at the end of the game. Like, barring catastrophe, if you're within a possession in the final quarter, final few minutes, you got a good chance to win if you got a good, solid B+, A- quarterback, right? I don't think it's not a messianic position, Messiah. It's not like you need a Brady to go out and win Super Bowls.
That's not what I said. Also, what I said was you're going to sink if you don't get that guy.
Fine.
Yeah, and also consider this. Yes, The LA Broncos, you know, are one of several teams, including the Trent Dilfer teams and Brad Johnson teams or whatever, that prove that, yes, you can win a Super Bowl with a dominant defense. But every single one of those teams won one Super Bowl.
Right, there you go.
And not only that, but even when the Broncos were put together, Peyton Manning was rewriting the record books for a little while before he fell off the cliff. So it's not exactly like they didn't add him anticipating that he would be a great quarterback.
Sure.
I'm saying is that great defense and, you know, game manager quarterback thing works to win you one Super Bowl. But every team that wins multiple Super Bowls does it on the strength of a Ben Roethlisberger,
yep.
a Tom Brady,
yep.
You know, maybe at some point in Aaron Rodgers, although they've only had one so far.
I still think Russell Wilson's going to get there.
Yeah, quite possibly. I mean, he certainly was one play away from doing it.
He's
right?
definitely, so, he's mean, definitely smart enough. I mean, he's got the mental tools. I don't know about the physical tools.
He is big tool. That is definitely true.
You know, Seahawks fans had a tough time. He's like with Roethlisberger back in the day. Like, they had that sleazy angle. They've got the square angle up in Seattle. And
dude, he's the biggest dork in the world. I hate him so much. But you can't – yeah, I mean, he can play.
He's a good player. Yeah. He's a good athlete. He's a great competitor.
And how come people couldn't figure that out? That's all I'm saying. Let's rewire these metrics.
But once again, the Seahawks didn't figure it out either. He was brought in to be Matt Flynn's backup.
I'm not saying the Seahawks are brilliant. I'm not saying the Cowboys. But it's exactly what I'm saying is that even the teams who are lucking into these quarterbacks are lucking into them.
Yeah.
How can nobody in this whole sport evaluate talent?
Well, the answer that I was going to offer for you for the Wilson example is that kind of what Gilman was saying earlier with the physical evaluation trumping the mental evaluation. And for me, I think it should be just the opposite. I think it's all about character. It's all about personality. It's all about
How about being able to memorize a playbook?
Well, yeah, that's intelligence.
Defenses.
Right, right. Okay, exactly. So 50-50 of mental acuity with being able to do that kind of analytical thinking, but also, too, the emotional stability when you're in the moment. I mean, there's that famous story everybody loves to tell about Joe Montana, right? There's John Candy over there in one of those Super Bowls that he won right before he drives down the field and wins it.
Stay with the same thing.
There's a calmness where it's like we practiced, we know what we need to do, let's just go out and do it. There's no mysteries here about what we got to do next.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think a lot of the quarterbacks that we've mentioned, Roethlisberger, Brady, obviously, Rodgers, they all have that kind of swagger.
You can't train that.
But a guy like, and a good
and
like,
they don't
a great example, which we talk about, you know, quarterback we talk about way too much on here, with Jay Cutler, all the physical tools to be a great quarterback, but can't get past it mentally. And I actually do believe the foundation of the mental acuity side is there, but it's that emotional stability that he just doesn't have. He doesn't help his players like stay motivated and play better. All right, so the last game that we did not talk about, I'll just comment on it real quick because I don't think these guys have huge opinions. Cardinals -7.5 on Monday Night Football, extra rest. They played the Thursday night game. Seemed like they got their mojo back. They're playing the Jets, by the way. Cardinals -7.5 hosting the Jets Monday Night Football. Jets in disarray. I mean, this would be an amazing way for them to bounce back after a couple consecutive losses, but I do not expect them to do that. I think the Cardinals run train on the Jets on Monday Night Football. Maybe, you know, the Jets in garbage time make that 7.5-point spread a possibility.
Is this Palmer or
Stanton? I think that it's Stanton. Well, it's actually circled because it might be Palmer. I think they should stick with Stanton even if Palmer's healthy because they found a groove there with him, and so did the defense. The defense really got
sad, though, isn't it?
But my point is a lot of confidence coming out of the Cardinals right now. Everybody's
Patrick on the other side of the ball.
The audience can't hear you when I'm talking to. There's been a lot of press with the Cardinals not being as good as people expected them to be coming into the season. I think Arians used that as motivation to crush the Niners. They got confidence coming back to a home game, home cooking for them. I expect the Cardinals to win and destroy the Jets. Do you guys see that? I mean, obviously the teaser is what I'm advocating for, tease the Cardinals down to -1.5. Do you guys see the regular spread becoming a factor potentially?
I wouldn't bet this game to save my
life.
Okay,
all right.
Well, only because
backup
Drew Stanton is a subpar quarterback and the New York Jets still have an absolute beast defensive line.
Sure.
Really,
they could get some
turnovers.
Get some turnovers.
So, yes, they could go in there, they could knock them down a bunch, they could get some turnovers. And as we've seen this entire year with Arizona, they are a team that when it's not clicking, when somebody is getting in the way of them doing what they do, they can look bad in a hurry. That having been said, I also think your point is very valid that, like, we have now heard so many stories about what's wrong with the Cardinals that there's actually probably some value back on the other side, that there's too much talent on this team, even if they're not nearly as good as everyone made them out to be at the beginning of the year, for them to be bad all year.
Look,
they're still talented.
The Jets are the L.A. Rams East. They're the exact same build. Mm. They've got the exact same strengths, exact same weaknesses, and...
Better coach, though.
Better coach, and they got Brandon Marshall.
Yeah, I was about to say, better skill position.
And the Rams already beat the Cardinals at home.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, the formula's
there. That was the game that Palmer got injured.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Jets could blow up that line.
Brandon Marshall could make a couple of plays and
wouldn't be the first time a D-line's taken over a game. That's something I think a lot of casual fans maybe don't pay enough attention to, is the defense's ability to win the game like that, to just completely destroy an offensive line's ability to protect not just their quarterback, but establish any kind of run game. I mean, you know, the Super Bowl, this most recent Super Bowl was a great example of that. The D-line just completely taking over the whole game. All right. Well, good. Good to have everybody back. That's week six for me. Do you guys have any kind of parting thoughts on it? I mean, I think...
about hearts and heads.
If it is a weird start to the season, I will say it's definitely. I think it's going to get a lot better. If this is the low point in terms of the quality of the average quality of the games out there,
Tony kind of convinced me otherwise. Though I'm kind of feeling his argument. I think we say it every year, including myself, and it's almost like kind of a cheap way to look at things.
It's just too early.
Well, and what weekend were you not entertained really?
Yeah. Oh, I always said there was. I said from the beginning, there's always at least three or four, usually more like five, good
so
games
I think
worth
we just
watching.
Forget about the crappy games from yesteryear. We just don't think about them.
You always forget. Yeah, like any given year, there's
some random Jets,
Dolphins, five or six good movies, and 400
bad movies. And just a reminder for all of you that was paying attention.
About Stealth, starring Jamie Foxx and Jessica Biel.
That was a damn good movie.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I was in that movie.
See
what?
No, I wasn't in that movie.
Dina recommends Stealth and Taking the Cardinals at Home.
So to review my Dieter teaser picks, because I nailed them all last week. Patriots, Steelers. I like the Bills and Titans. These guys, I think, would like the Falcons and the Cowboys as well. Those look like cool dog picks.
No,
and then the Cardinals on Monday Night Football.
Not at all. Where did you get Falcons from, man? The Seahawks are going
to No, Gilman said +12 he liked.
The Seahawks are going to clean house in the Falcons.
All right, let's make that the marquee game to reflect back on. All right, fellas, good to have everybody back. Good to see you guys for the sixth week in a row here on NFL Cash Money. I am your host, Dieter McBusiness, joined once again by Alex Gilman and Tony Baker.
Whatever you do, don't take our advice.
And yeah, definitely, if you are having problems
don't
with gambling,
what Donnie don't does.
If you or someone you know has a problem with gambling, Google AdCare. I hear they're fantastic for drugs and alcohol as well. They do everything.
Yes.
All your problems are solved if you just Google AdCare. All right, yo, for all the other guys and me, we are reminding you to know the heart, but
bet with the head.